This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll head out to Vegas, baby. Vegas, get you ready for Monday Night Football. The first time we'll have fans in Allegiant Stadium, Chris. It feels like a big moment there. And Jason Fitz is going to join us here. I'm very interested to see what kind of state he's going to be in because he loves this team and he's very weird about it.
Absolutely. I'm sure Raider Nation is going to be fired up, the new black hole out there at Allegiant Stadium. But it's an exciting game, man. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing my Ravens, too. I know we've had a rash of injuries during training camp, but I'm excited to see what this team is going to look like in 2021.
And so much in modern football, as we've talked about how much running backs matter, quote-unquote, we'll have an interesting discussion about how that position could swing tonight's game based on who is unavailable for one team and maybe recently available for another. We'll get to that coming up in a little bit. And something one of our NFL analysts said that got to Chris Canty a little bit, not so sure about what we heard earlier on this show, but just a little bit. But before we do that, Chris, we've been talking about surprises all day from this week's NFL season, week one. And you know this as well as anybody's playing in the NFL as long as you did. Every year's a new year. Week one, there's always going to be some things that you don't see coming because you've been working on it all offseason. You haven't seen a team in another jersey. And that change from week one to week two in the first month of the regular season really can be pretty wild. So we want to figure out what's real and what's just week one. So we're going to ask that question, or rather we're going to have our producer Shannon Penn ask us those questions here with a fancy music bed so we can sound like we're having football fun on this
one. Oh boy, that sounds good. All right, guys, we'll start with you, Mike Golic Jr. Real or week one? No sophomore slump for Justin Herbert.
Yeah, I am going to go real and spectacular on this one here. Justin Herbert in week one on third down. This is third down alone. 13 of 16 for 160 passing yards and a touchdown. 12 of his 13 completions resulted in a first down. Chris, he looked composed in ways that we didn't get to see last year behind an offensive line that got a major revamp this offseason.
Yeah, to me, and that's where the story has to start, right? The offensive line, what they did up front, drafting Rashawn Slater, also bringing in Corey Linsley from the Green Bay Packers, solidifying that group up front, keeping Justin Herbert clean. That makes all the difference in the world. And then we saw that the kid has the goods in his performance, especially on the money down. Also sneaky impressive, seeing what he did after that early fourth quarter turnover, coming back the next possession and throwing a touchdown. Big time from Justin Herbert.
All right, Chris, the Arizona Cardinals are a legit threat in the NFC West. Is that real or is that just week one?
Nah, that's real, guys. Nah, we got to buy into the hype. The way they went down there and whipped on Tennessee, a team that everybody is expecting to be in the AFC playoff mix, I'm impressed by what the Cardinals did, man. I mean, they did it on all three phases, both sides of the ball. The defense, anchored by Chan Jones, just absolutely dominated that Titans offensive line. And then offensively, Kyler Murray is a human cheat code. Like, just seeing what he's doing now, not only does he have DeAndre Hopkins to get the football to, but he's also got A.J. Green in that receiving core. Like, this Arizona Cardinals team is going to be one to watch out for.
Yeah, they've got speed to burn at all those positions. Added Rondell Moore. Christian Kirk got in on some of the action. But I look to it, that defense. We had a lot of questions about that unit last year. Isaiah Simmons, their former top pick out of Clemson, maybe rounding into form. Zaven Collins at linebacker holding Derrick Henry. And I know some of this is game flow. But if Derrick Henry goes for 17 carries and only 58 yards, you're doing something right on that side of the ball in a way that I think absolutely makes them legit in what is going to be, we say it every year, but this year with our chest, the NFC West, hide your kids, put everyone to bed. This is very, very scary out there.
All right, Mike, real or week one? Are the Bills really that bad?
I'm going to go week one on this one, Chris. I just refuse to believe that a team that was that productive last year offensively and that added so much defensively, Greg Rousseau there, we saw A.J. Epinesa starting to be a little bit more productive. I still think that stuff's going to come alive and water will find its level, but I think they got a reality check for a team that maybe thought it arrived last season.
No, no question about it. And that Buffalo Bills defense, that young pass rush, is going to have to pick it up a little bit. That's the next step for that unit. They're going to have to be able to generate more pressure on the quarterback. They were able to keep that Steelers offense in check early on in the first half, but in the second half, the floodgates open, and they've got to figure out a way to be able to turn off that faucet when that opposing offense gets going. They couldn't do that yesterday. Special teams is also a phase that they've got to figure out. You can't allow Miles Killebrew and that punt return unit to to wreck the game with a blocked punt for a touchdown. So maybe we need to pump the brakes on the Bills just a little bit in terms of thinking that they've arrived. This is still a relatively young football team that has a lot of growing to do in order to realize the expectations that everybody has on them this season.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Is it real or is it week one? What do we got next, Shannon?
All right, Chris. Real or week one? The Atlanta Falcons will regret not drafting a quarterback.
Yeah, I'm going to say this is real. And listen, everybody was enamored with Kyle Pitts and his freakish athletic ability in the pre-draft process. But you realize the first three picks were quarterbacks. And that's where the NFL is going in terms of being a quarterback-driven league. And just watching some of the things that we've seen from Justin Fields, I just felt like it was an opportunity for them to draft a local kid, knowing that Matt Ryan was getting closer to the end than he was in the beginning. So it just seems like it made a lot of sense based on where they were at in their program building to draft Justin Fields. They didn't do that, and they just got embarrassed by the Philadelphia Eagles, a team with a young quarterback in yesterday's regular season debut.
Yeah, a team who was, I mean, dink and dunk is being kind to what the Eagles decided to do. So concerns about the Falcons' defense, I absolutely think that this is real. And I was in the camp that I thought, all right, based on the moves you had made financially with Matt Ryan, you were going to have to keep him around. I thought with Arthur Smith coming over and that play-action stuff that did so much for Ryan Tannehill, you could see similar results to where we saw Matt Ryan's best back in 2015. I already feel like I can say I'm dead wrong, and it's about opportunity cost, I think, just as much as anything, Chris, because you had a class of quarterbacks with five guys that all in their own ways showed up in a way that looks like it inspires hope for the future. This next crop of quarterbacks that's coming out, I don't know if there's a dude of that caliber in this group to be excited about. This might be about the opportunity lost if you're Atlanta and if you're Arthur Smith thinking self-preservation.
All right, Mike, speaking of young quarterbacks, the Patriots made the right choice at QB. Is that real or is that week one?
Oh, that's absolutely real. And, I mean, this was – we talked about Mac Jones preseason and all the stuff that we did there. This was a 400-level defense, very akin to the one he sees in practice for Brian Flores in that outfit. Incredibly talented, a scheme that can usually get to young guys with as multiple as they are. But, Chris, I thought they had the right game plan that they really implemented this entire time. Keep it short, give them some opportunities to turn that thing loose. He took care of it. We know they put the ball on the ground a couple of times, four fumbles, two lost, and he was included in one of those. But this is a team built right up front to give him the protection he needs to go out and be the exact player they saw at Alabama. Like what he did in college showed up on film for this team, albeit they're weaning him onto it slowly but surely.
Yeah, but I thought that was the right game plan for yesterday going up against Tua in that Miami Dolphins offense, because you felt like Tua would give you an opportunity at some point in that game to be able to seize control, and he absolutely did. He threw that pick early in the fourth quarter, an ill-advised throw on third down, something that should never happen, especially when you have the lead. So I thought Bill Belichick had the right game plan, and they kind of held the reins in on Mac Jones. But to the kid's credit, like, he showed that he had full command of that offense, and when he had opportunities to rip the ball downfield, he was absolutely able to go out there and execute. So they absolutely made the right decision when it came to taking Mac Jones with the 15th overall pick. That was the right move for that franchise moving forward. And yesterday's performance was something that they can build on for the rest of the regular season.
All right, last and possibly least, my New York Giants. Chris, New York Giants offensive struggles continue. Is that real or is that just week one?
That's real, man. I mean, the offense has struggled the last couple of years since Daniel Jones has taken over the reins as quarterback. They were the 31st ranked offense last year. And yesterday, they didn't fare much better than that. I mean, it's just disappointing that Daniel Jones and that offense can't find a way to be able to provide some balance, be able to have a ground game, and then the turnovers. That turnover on the first possession of the first half was absolutely the death knell for that team. The Broncos take that ball down, kick a field goal. They push the lead to 20-7, and that's all she wrote. So for all of the investments that they've made on the offensive side of the ball this offseason, to not have more return on that investment in week one has got to be disappointing for Dave Gettleman and Joe Judge.
And that's going to be what he's ultimately judged on. I agree. This is, to quote the late, great Denny Green, they are who we thought they were. I saw nothing that indicated growth to me from that Giants team. And as we take stock this season, not only of Daniel Jones, but of Dave Gettleman, we're going to look around on that offense and say, all right, you spent a number two overall pick on Saquon Barkley, about where you allocate capital. Andrew Thomas at the fourth overall pick. Matt Peart getting time at right tackle in this game, a third-round pick. Will Hernandez, a second-round pick. And Daniel Jones, the guy you traded up to get. All of those, spending capital in the right spots, But the evaluation off enough that we got to ask about who is buying the groceries here, and we'll continue to if this doesn't get better. I think this is real, and I think these are going to be issues. That is week one of the NFL in the books at Mike Golic Jr. and at Chris Canty 99. What did you think was real or week one of this NFL's first opening weekend? Coming up next, though, we'll get to one of the biggest games from yesterday. The Cleveland Browns went on the road and almost stole one in Kansas City at Arrowhead. Was this more about what we saw from Patrick Mahomes or what we didn't see from Baker Mayfield? Next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We'll head out to Allegiant Stadium, check in with Jason Fitz ahead of Monday Night Football in about 10 minutes here. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty were presented by Progressive Insurance. And Chris, we can only hope that this game between the Raiders and your Ravens is half as entertaining as one of the ones we got Sunday afternoon between the Browns and the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes and company do exactly what they've always done, Chris. I said they're like the prime Golden State Warriors of the NFL. There's no lead that's safe, and anytime they've got to turn it on, Pat Mahomes seems to be able to be that dude and get it done.
Oh, you saw that with the off-schedule play that Pat Mahomes made and Tyreek Hill out of that slot being able to find his way to uncover down the middle of the field. Felt like there was a little bit of a blown coverage. Not sure whether that was Pat Mahomes just manipulating the secondary with his eyes. But whatever, the Cleveland Browns didn't have defenders where they were supposed to be, and they took full advantage of it. But that's been the story of Pat Mahomes, man. That's why he's must-watch television anytime the Kansas City Chiefs are playing, because you get to see this special, special talent that's on display with a lot of all-time weapons at his disposal.
Now, we know Patrick Mahomes is capable of all that. We've seen him win the MVP. We've seen him be the Super Bowl MVP. On the other side, you and I talked earlier about what Baker Mayfield still has left to prove and what's turned into a big contract year for him. Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst, joined us earlier, and we asked her about how she felt Baker performed in Sunday's game and if that loss falls on him.
It's, to me, less about whether Mayfield is a franchise quarterback. I think he played really well up till that drive and certainly looks like one of the better quarterbacks in the league, and more about the gap between him and Patrick Mahomes, which is unfair, right? Because there's a gap between every quarterback and Patrick Mahomes. But I'll expand that and say the top tier of quarterbacks who kind of have those signature moments, those comeback drives, the execution you need at the end of the game, and really the lack of mental errors, which is kind of what befell Baker. And it's unfortunate because up until that point, he was extremely accurate and just totally in command of that offense. And so you hope he bounces back because this looks like a really good football team.
You buy that, Chris?
No, it's hard for me to buy it, man. Like this whole game, this whole season is about whether or not Baker Mayfield can answer the question of whether or not he's going to be one of those quarterbacks that we mentioned in the same breath as a Pat Mahomes or a Dak Prescott or a Josh Allen. Like, we want to see Baker ascend to that level, because if he does, then the Cleveland Browns have a roster that can compete for a championship. And yesterday, there was a prime opportunity for Baker late in that game. He had two possessions, one that ended in a three and out and another one that resulted in a pick, where he could have drove his team down there and positioned them for a go-ahead score. It just didn't happen. When you start talking about quarterbacks that are going to get paid $40-plus million on average annual value in contracts, they got to come up for their team in those spots, and Baker just came up small. So when we start having the question of, you know, how did Baker play, like, that was the one question that I wanted to see answered yesterday, that situation, being down in a game, trying to throw your team back in it without having the benefit of play action or a run game to lean on, and Baker Mayfield couldn't get it done. As well as he played the first three and a half quarters, that will be the thing that people hang on to, and that's what the Cleveland front office is going to look at when it comes to getting the contract extension done.
Yeah, Chris, I think looking at that with the extension, because you're right, how we grade this for Baker based on the floor that we've seen set for him already. I always go back to something. I remember talking to Dan Orlovsky, former NFL quarterback, our great ESPN NFL analyst here. Dan was a guy who was a starter for a while in the NFL and then transitioned to a backup. And he told us about a conversation he had with one of his position coaches that basically said to him, the difference between being one of the 32 guys as a starter in the NFL and being a backup is really only something that comes down to about a handful of plays, four, maybe five plays a game, where you can affect the game on a different level, where you can elevate your team beyond what the scheme is supposed to do for you. That's going to be the difference between Baker Mayfield and not only a second contract for him and this big new deal, but also between them having found their quarterback of the future for like the real long term, and this being a Jared Goff situation where in a couple of years they're looking for the next new and better thing to take them over that hump. That was always my comparison, Chris, for Baker Mayfield, is it reeked of what we saw with Jared Goff and the Rams, meaning you seem to have an offense and a team structure built around that's going to allow you with a good quarterback to potentially get to a Super Bowl. It wouldn't shock me if the Browns got there, but when you talk about having a difference maker that by and large you need at that position, they fell short, and you've seen now the difference for Los Angeles through one game with Matt Stafford and the energy he brings that team. And I just think talent-wise, Baker Mayfield's a lot closer to the Jared Goff side of the spectrum than he is to the Matt Staffords and Pat Mahomes of the world.
I'm agreeing with you on that front, but you also got to factor in the intangibles that comes with Bake, because there's no doubt that he's a change agent when it comes to turning the fortunes of that Cleveland Browns franchise. But ultimately, it's going to come down to, can he make the necessary plays at the critical moments in games to be the difference in his team being able to win? And he hasn't been able to do that. He didn't do that in the AFC divisional round playoff game in Arrowhead last year, and he didn't do it yesterday. So I think that's the question that Andrew Berry, their general manager, has to answer. You've got to figure this out, because I believe that Baker Mayfield is the long-term solution at the quarterback position for the Browns, but at the right number. Because if he can't make those plays at the end of games like he didn't make those plays yesterday, then you've got to build your team a certain way, and you've got to allocate a certain amount of cap dollars to other areas of your roster to make sure you have the supporting cast to get you and Baker Mayfield where they want to go. And so I think that's the key in all of this, just kind of recognizing what Baker is and seeing where he's at in his development. And when they do pull the trigger on a contract extension, making sure it's at a number that makes sense in comparison to some of the other quarterbacks that we've seen that can make those late game plays and make those throws for their team to win.
Yeah, Chris, that's why I thought it was a no-lose for the Browns coming into this season to walk in not having offered him a contract extension, especially after that Josh Allen one kind of reset the market. Because if you go through and Baker looks like this, good but not great, you probably have a better chance of getting him at that number. And if Baker goes out and overperforms and is great, well, then you got another year's worth of answers as to why you should be paying him top dollar, and you can feel great about that walking into the future, because I'm with you. Based on the life they've lived, the one they got right now is more than good enough. It is more than enough to get them to a place they haven't been in a good long time here. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio reminding you, trains appear to be further away and moving more slowly than they are. If the signals are on, the train is on its way. And remember one thing, stop, because trains can't. By the way, I mean, a train, just not something I want to mess with, if I'm being totally honest here. I don't know why. Like, I'm glad we're saying this in case you didn't know that, but if this is news to you, trains, big, fast, strong, bigger, faster, stronger than you, let me be the one to tell you, you don't want those problems. That seems self-explanatory.
Yeah, that's not a good matchup. That's not a good matchup, Coach. That's one of those situations you got to know your personnel, and you're not going to win a battle against the train. So, to your point.
And Chris, this is also the same guy that said he could beat a deer in a fight. Just to let
all
you
right,
know.
Listen.
Just to let you know.
That was one time at 4:30 in the morning, and I still believe that if you give me like a deer, not a buck that's got the antlers on that, but like a
doe.
Yeah,
a
you give me deer? like a large doe. I got a good chance of like breaking a leg or something and getting in there and making it ugly, ground and pound this
thing. This is complete cat. You said it on this time slot a few months ago. That is complete cat.
Listen.
You said if it came down to it, I could beat a deer to protect my family.
Well, yes, obviously. Chris, if your fiance was under attack from a deer, do you not think that you, former NFL defensive lineman, are going to do whatever it takes taking down that deer?
Mike, I'm going to try to find a way to be able to protect her and me at the same time and get us out of that situation, but I don't anticipate being in said circumstances, because both of us know better than to try to fight a damn deer. It's not a good matchup for us. It's not going to work out. So to Cliff and what the guys behind the glass are saying, you try to avoid those situations at all costs, and to sit here and say that you're going to beat up a deer, I mean, come on, man. I'm trying to be a good teammate and show faith and belief in you, but I can't buy that one, partner.
As the other guy behind the glass, all I'm saying is if he doesn't have to deal with the antlers, I think Junior can get it accomplished.
That's why I love Matlack, and that's why On Thin Ice will be back again this upcoming season, ESPN's premier hockey coverage segment here. So don't mess with trains. Don't mess with deer. Coming up next, though, we'll see if Jason Fitz and the Las Vegas Raiders are ready to mess with Chris Canty's Baltimore Ravens here on ESPN Radio and ESPN+.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And as we wrap up week one of the NFL season, it's time to get you ready for Monday Night Football. The Monday Night Football preview is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. And we head out to Sin City, where our guy Jason Fitz, co-host of Spain and Fitz, right after us, 7 to 9 Eastern on ESPN Radio, is live on the scene at Allegiant as they get ready to kick off this season and kick off this stadium's tenure with fans in the stands. Fitzy, how are you feeling right now, man? We know you live and die with this team, so what's the mood around there for you and this fan base?
I got to be honest, Mike. I've never seen anything like this. I mean, I've been to NFL cities everywhere. This is the most college atmosphere I've ever seen. I got to Vegas yesterday, and it is a sea of silver and black everywhere. And what's interesting is that, you know, it's Vegas, so it's 105 degrees outside. There really isn't normal tailgating. What that ends up being is you've got a stadium that is already full, and I mean full right now, of Raiders fans that are being absolutely insane everywhere we look. I don't know what to expect from the Raiders, but I know what to expect from this crowd. It's going to be epic.
Fitzy, and that's what I want to kind of ask you about. What would constitute a successful season for your Raiders in 2021?
Yeah, it's got to be playoffs. Look, and realistically, I think that a lot of people are too down on this team. There are question marks about this team, but I guess what I would challenge is, how are those question marks demonstrably worse than they were last year? Like, the defense was hot garbage last year, and it was still an 8-18. We talk about them like they're coming off 4-12. I don't think that's fair. They have some players that are young on defense. I think tonight they're going to get gashed, frankly, but I think over the course of the season they have the opportunity to get better. So it all becomes a question mark of how the offensive line plays, and if this offensive line holds up at all, I think the Raiders have the chance to be around 9-8, which puts them right in the playoff hunt.
Fitz, you mentioned you think they're going to get gashed tonight, but with that O-line, how much does it help you hearing, according to Adam Schefter, Josh Jacobs, who was downgraded this weekend, went through the walkthrough this morning feeling better and on track to potentially play tonight?
Yeah, so I've talked to a couple of people that I think are smart around the organization. I think he is going to play. I'm not sure he's going to get his normal full workload, so this is where the questionable signing of Kenyon Drake to a lot of people becomes a smart signing. So I feel better about it. Mike, I think you could appreciate this too. One thing to look for is that, look at Gruden's past. I mean, his best offenses were when he had Tyrone Wheatley and Charlie Garner. He's going to use Jacobs and Kenyon Drake much to that same level, and he's going to use Darren Waller the way he used to use Tim Brown. So, you know, I think that this Raiders offense looks to be very, very dogmatic in what they do. Time of possession, they're going to look to control the clock, take some strikes when they can, but I expect Carr to be getting the ball out of his hands incredibly quickly in this situation. They're going to struggle to run the ball, so they'll use Kenyon Drake, I think, a lot out of the backfield as a pass catcher.
Fitzy, where are the Raiders fans with John Gruden overall? I know everybody is still in this honeymoon phase with the team moving to Las Vegas, and everybody's excited about being able to have fans in the actual stadium this year. But where are the Raiders fans with John Gruden, and how do they feel about their head coach?
I think impatient is probably a good spot to work. And not about the coach, John Gruden, about the GM, John Gruden. I don't care that Mike Mayock has the title. We all know who's picking the ingredients. So you can't turn around and say that the team doesn't have enough talent to win when you're realistically responsible for that talent. So a lot of that lies at the feet of John Gruden. If this team underperforms, it's not just about Mike Mayock getting fired. It's about, will Mark Davis have the you-know-what to take personnel control away from John Gruden and only let him coach? And I think that would actually be smarter for the franchise long-term until that happens. I mean, John Gruden, the talent evaluator, nowhere near as good as John Gruden, the offensive coach.
We've seen a lot of coaches fall into that trap in the NFL over the years. We're talking to Jason Fitz, co-host of Spain and Fitz, live from Allegiant, getting ready to watch the Ravens and the Raiders on Monday Night Football. Fitz, now to the real stuff, though. For this stadium, we know that there's apparently seating down near the field that replicates like a table at a club, if you will. They got bottle service. They got all these things going on there. So are you going to be able to sneak down there and give us a preview of what life's like when Vegas enters the NFL stadium game?
Yeah, you know, I've been angling to get me a free bottle all day long, Mike. Come on, let's go. I know what's at stake here. I'm trying to get into that. The club is impossible to get into, and it's interesting. There's two different sections of this stadium. There's, like, the VIPs. Like, so as you walk up to the stadium, MGM has their own VIP entrance. The Wynn has their own VIP entrance. Caesars has their own VIP entrance. So, but then you get to the actual seats, and the actual seats are filled with a lot of the same people I saw in Oakland. So I'm interested to see what the party's like. I can tell you this. They did a really brilliant thing with the tailgating and the way they gave everybody a pre-party area at the Luxor and Mandalay Bay. So I'm looking right now out the back of the stadium at a massive sea of people that are actually just coming over. So I think they're already going to be good in bottle service by the time they get here. Could get chaotic.
There we go. Love to hear bottle service and NFL football game together, Chris.
Oh, no question about it. No question about it. I mean, I know they've got to be fired up about having this opportunity to be in this stadium. And what I'm interested to see is the actual acoustics in the stadium, because they said they were designing it so that it would be really, really loud. So I'm interested to see how that all works out and what kind of home field advantage the Raiders are going to be working with.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that's an undertold part of this entire game. When you think about it, this is, when's the last time? What, Nashville and Jacksonville were the last time we saw a city that had never had the NFL before get the NFL? We have no idea how this NFL crowd will feel in a game. But I can tell you this. I mean, I've gotten as far away in every corner as I can just to do this interview. It is thunderously loud in here as people come in. So I think the building's going to shake. And, in fact, Derek Carr went to the media last week to say, hey, guys, remember, when we have the ball, we need you to be quiet because this is a fired-up, energized Vegas crowd. It's never had football before. So I think the big story tomorrow is going to be how loud is this crowd and what impact does it have on the game.
I need the big story tomorrow to be Jason Fitz sneaking into the club and taking a picture with sparklers in his mouth. Jason, that's what I need from you tonight, if nothing else. Okay, buddy?
As long as it doesn't get me fired, I'm up to try. Well, you know what? Forget it. I can find a job. As long as it doesn't get me arrested, I will try it for you, Mike.
There we go. Jason Fitz going to be on the scene tonight for Monday Night Football. Fitzy, have a blast, man. Good luck, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
That is our Monday Night Football preview. It's brought to you by Progressive Insurance. With insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Coming up next, though, hopefully for Jason Fitz of the crowd at Allegiant, they can avoid the one thing that happened at Washington football team's opening game at FedEx Field. We will tell you how the stress test went from breaking diamonds to bursting pipes next on ESPN Radio. Dancy and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Guests have joined us on the Goodyear Hotline here. Mike Golic Jr. along with Super Bowl champ Chris Canty. Our thanks to some friends that came by today. Jen Latta from ESPN Milwaukee breaking down whatever the hell we call that performance from the Packers yesterday, Chris. I still haven't quite figured that one out, but, you know.
Yeah, that's all bad from the Packers. Let's hope that they can figure it out before week two kicks off.
Down bad in Green Bay right now. Tyler Foljam also joined us to get you right on the betting front for Monday Night Football. Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst, who's going to be on one of these great megacasts we're about to tell you about for the game tonight. And Jason Fitz, ESPN Radio's own co-host of Spain and Fitz, who's out at Allegiant Stadium right now getting ready for kickoff. If you missed any of that, go ahead and download, subscribe, rate, and review the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast wherever you get your podcast. It's been a great NFL week one. Let's finish it off right with Monday Night Football and keep that same energy. All right, Chris, keeping that same energy here, we got to figure out which way we're going to watch Monday Night Football tonight. We talked about watching games on Sunday. You got options here. The normal Monday Night Football booth with Steve Levy and the boys. We have got ESPN's other Monday Night Football booth with Peyton and Eli Manning going on for the first time. And our friend Mina Kimes and the folks at NFL Live are going to be on ESPN Plus for a stream tonight. The Megacast breaking down all sorts of in-game analytics, the betting angles, and what have you, Chris. Do you know what you're going to go with yet?
I feel like I'm leaning toward checking out Easy and his brother Peyton Manning, man. I mean, I know them a little bit, and just kind of knowing how funny Peyton is and then knowing how funny Eli is behind the scenes, like seeing those two actually do a game together and kind of break down some of the X's and O's, I feel like that might be the way that I go with tonight's broadcast, man.
Chris, I feel like, too, with how much we've talked about you and Eli, obviously former teammates, know each other well, they mentioned they're going to have guests like former friends of theirs on these broadcasts. So have they tapped you for this yet?
No, they haven't tapped me for this yet. But you know what? I feel like Eli Manning needs to come on my show before I jump on the Monday Night Football broadcast with him and his brother. I feel like that's how we kind of need to work this thing a little bit. He's got to come show us some love. He's shown KJM some love. He needs to come show Canty and Golic Jr. some love.
It's so right. Before we commit you to the home and home on this one, we've got to make sure Eli's ready to come do the road trip. Couldn't agree more on that one. So we'll start to get that in the works. Jimmy Pitaro, baby, call us here. We got ideas for you here. But keeping that same energy, Chris, we had week one in the NFL. We know everyone's getting ready. It's week one for the entire league. That includes, apparently, the facilities. Did you see that at FedEx Field, the Washington football team and the Chargers were playing, but in the crowd, apparently a pipe burst overhead in FedEx Field, soaking a bunch of the home crowd fans. Now, they claimed that it was not sewage water, that that was a pipe that I was believed linked to a collector for rainwater here. But either way, Chris, I am not sitting under whatever comes out of a stadium pipe randomly in the middle of a game.
Yeah, something about that doesn't pass the smell test for me, Mike. I'm just saying, I'm not buying it out there in FedEx Field. I don't understand how they could let something like that happen to their fans. It's been bad enough the last few years over there prior to Ron Rivera. So, I mean, they shouldn't be putting the fans through this on top of having to suffer through a week one L to the Chargers. So I just feel like the Washington football team, on top of figuring out what name they're going to be called down in the future, they need to figure out how to make sure they keep their fans safe from whatever was coming out of that pipe.
Ironically, I think it was RG3 that made popular the phrase, pressure break up either makes diamonds or it bursts pipes. Here we saw what the answer was.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, worth saying, a Washington football team spokesperson told our own John Keim that the leak came from a storage tank filled with rainwater. We gave the fans in that section the option to move to a suite for the rest of the game, and we're going to give them tickets to a game of their choice in the future. They were also given Washington football team gear. So, Chris, you said it didn't pass the smell test. I'm sure that's exactly what they were saying about the water that was pouring onto them in the middle of that game. So, not great.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I feel like they could have came with a little bit more for the fans too, right? Just a little something more.
I'd have treated that one like when they're trying to give you a oversold flight, the travel voucher. You got to get up to a certain number for me to walk out of my chair and actually consider that one. Probably would have been the same thing they could have done here. Now, Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. With more than 30 unique coverage options available, Progressive knows small business. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. But keeping that same energy, Chris, let's stay with in-stadium weird stuff happening here, because college football over the weekend, the Miami Hurricanes survived a close game against Appalachian State. They pull it off on the field. But no one's eyes were really glued to that, because in the middle of that game, we had what was believed to be a feral cat loose in the stadium, clinging for its life among the second level of the stands, and it was caught by a group of fans. If you're watching on ESPN Plus right now, caught by a group of fans with an American flag that they had brought to the game here. Now, Chris, I'm simultaneously thankful that these fans caught this cat and saved it one of its nine lives, but also concerned they were being a little too rough with the cat after, for my liking.
Yeah, they were kind of showing the cat off like a trophy after they tried to let everybody know that the cat was safe. But, I mean, that was an incredible little saga right there. I mean, the cat is doing his best Tom Cruise Mission Impossible impersonation. And meanwhile, on the field, Miami is clinging to a lead over App State, and they need a field goal late to be able to solidify the win. But it was incredible seeing that cat dangle like that and then fall, and then they caught him with the American flag. I will say this, that cat lost one of his nine lives with that whole debacle.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, impressed that the cat was able to hold on that long. Normally when I think of stadium cats, I think of like the old Vet in Philadelphia where my dad played, Chris. Like, wasn't surprised we had animals there. A little more surprised that Hard Rock's got some cats going on.
Yeah, especially at the upper deck. How did the cat get to the upper deck? How did the cat get over the ledge? Like, there are a whole lot of questions that I have about how that all went down over the weekend at Hard Rock Stadium, but all's well that ends well. The cat is safe. No animals were harmed, and they get to keep it pushing.
If I know anything, friend of the program and college football writer over at The Athletic, Nicole Arbach, who is the world-renowned leader in finding the random fans that become internet famous, is probably already on the case of the Miami cat that was, again, as Chris Canty pointed out, safe, sound, and returned to whatever it was doing before. Whatever cats do, they're very mysterious, and I don't ask a lot of those questions. Coming up next, though, no mystery about where we're taking you up to. Monday Night Football between the Ravens and the Vegas Raiders is going to be on later tonight. To get you to that point, Spain and Fitz take over next on ESPN Radio.
Miami Hurricats.